Before we start this week's episode, we'd like to remind you folks that the Air Raid podcast is available at many places, including the Stitcher Radio app for your mobile device, iTunes, our website air-raid.net, and of course at www.cairoradio.com. Hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 236 in what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden, and this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Ear holes. Welcome, everybody. Welcome back this wonderful week. The week after Valentine's Day. You know what I did for Valentine's Day? I spent way too much on food, which is kind of normal, right? Well, not normal for the Roden family, because we do not do that at all. We do not do that. We don't go out to expensive dinners anymore. And we went to this super fancy place, super fancy Seattle restaurant, famous Seattle famous restaurant. I don't know if it's famous outside of Seattle, but it is here. And had, you know, what seemed to be a pretty decent meal. And then I got food poisoning. Yeah, food poisoning, man. Like, immediately after we got into the car to go home, it hit me. And when we got home, I was throwing up, and it was just a bad scene. A bad scene. Yeah, so getting, you know, food poisoning cost me $300. That's expensive. When I say that out loud, when I say that number out loud, $300 for food, that makes me sad that we spent that much on that and then got sick to boot. That's terrible. That's terrible. Well, anyway, I hope your Valentine's Day was fine. If you don't have a Valentine to share it with, I hope it was okay, right? Because that could be, yeah. Let's not get into that. Whatever. Let's leave that. Let's let it lie. Let it lie. Okay. We've got a great show planned for you this week, folks. Special guest, Alisa Ambrosio, of the band Magic Markers, which is one of the favorites of mine. And she's got this new solo record out right now on Drag City Records called The Immoralist, which is fantastic. And we're going to be featuring some tunes from that record on this here program this week. And we have a really good chat. There's one thing, though. One thing that I must mention before we get into it here is that it was all planned out. We were planning on having her and her band mates and the band that she was touring with to come to the backyard and do the chat here, but it didn't work out that way, and I ended up going down to a bar called the Cozy Nut in Greenwood neighborhood of North Seattle, which is a fantastic establishment, by the way. I ended up forgetting my wallet, and the bartender was nice enough to give me a beer, which was great. And it's a fantastic little spot. So if you're here in Seattle, go up to Greenwood and check out the Cozy Nut, man. A great place. And the guys there built pretty much everything in there. It's all custom made bar and everything like that. It's got like cross-sectional, like old telephone pole cross-sections that they've cut and made into a bar, and it's just awesome. The ambiance is fantastic. And I'll tell you what, the food in there smelled way better than the place that I went to for Valentine's Day. So go and check it out. It won't give you food poisoning. That's their tagline. But anyway, so we did this little chat in the bar, and so therefore there are some audio issues with this here episode. We haven't done this in a long time. We haven't gone out to a place, you know, that has a lot of background noise in a long time on this show, and I don't like doing it, but I wanted to talk with Alyssa Ambrosio because I am a big fan of hers, and it was a treat to get to meet her and sit down and discuss some things. So we'll get into that in a second. I want to bring it to a serious note here really quick. One of our friends, one of our dear friends of the Air Raid podcast, who has been on this show once or twice, I believe. He used to do a show with his brother, Nick Allers, who is now the second half of the Grapes of Rad podcast. PJ Allers, good buddy of mine, has been diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer. And he needs your help. He needs a lot of help here. The prognosis is not great. They're giving him, you know, 2 to 3 years to live. It's a hard deal, man, because he's a father. He's a husband. And he's only 33 years old. And this is really sad. He's got just a beautiful, just a wonderful and smart 7-year-old daughter. This is just a rough situation. And on top of that, PJ is a server at a bar down in Portland. You know, servers don't make a whole ton of money. And so he could use some financial support, because the next 2 to 3 years is going to be a rough one for him and his family. And they're going to have a lot of medical bills. So a YouCaring.com fundraising site. There has been a fundraising page set up for PJ and his family, and we urge all of you guys to go and check this out. We're going to have a link to this on the show blog at www.air-raid.net, and I'm also going to give it to you here as well. Let me just see if I can find it here. Okay, so it's youcaring.com. Let's see, /medical-fundraiser/let. Oh, geez, this is long. This is really long. Go to www.air-raid.net and click on the link that we will have provided there, or you can visit us on Facebook and click on the link there as well, because we do have a post up right now to take you directly to the funding site. And anything that you can donate is going to really help this family out. The goal is $10,000, but I know that we can get over that. We need to help these guys out, man. PJ is one of the greats. He's one of the reasons that this show has morphed into what it is today. And he's just a great dude. If you want to go back and listen to the Air Raid episode with him, you can find that by going to our website. Once again, air-raid.net, clicking on the archives page and scrolling all the way down to episode number 17, where PJ and his brother Nick came over onto the show. They were doing a podcast at the time called Planned Brotherhood, which if you've never heard that one, you definitely should seek that out as well, because that's one of my all-time favorite shows. It's not going anymore, but it was a great program while it was around. So check that out as well, and please donate to the fundraiser. Donate to the fundraiser. Okay, yeah, help a buddy out here, help a family out that's really going to need this. And is well deserving of it as well. So, okay, said that. Let's do this, shall we? Let's move out of the sad and into this chat with Alyssa Ambrosio. And she's got some tour dates that they are on right now, and we'll spell that out for you at the end of the program. Okay, this one, this song is called Superstitious, off of Alyssa's first solo album, The Amoralist, and we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid podcast for your ears when we return. Stay with us. When it comes. For a couple years, though.
Yes, from 2009 to 2000. No, I guess it must have been end of 2008.
Yeah.
To 2010, I guess.
Okay. And are you're originally an East Coaster?
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Where from?
I was born in New Britain, Connecticut, and I grew up in Hartford and Marlborough, Connecticut.
Wait, there's a New Britain?
Yeah.
I never even knew that existed.
I don't really know why you would, because Connecticut is really small and.
Yeah.
Did you grow up here?
I did. Yeah, yeah.
In
I'm a Washingtonian, through and through.
Seattle?
Not Seattle.
Where
small
did you grow
town
up?
Over on the Kitsap Peninsula. Much like your town of New Britain, most people wouldn't even know about it.
Okay.
You know?
Do you know how to pronounce Klatskanai?
Klatskanai?
Klatskanai.
I don't even know what that is.
It is. I think it's a town in Washington where
I know
Raymond
there's
Carver
like a
was born.
Click-a-tat? Click-a-tat?
There used to be a band, too, called Click-a-tat Ikatawi.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I don't know what that means, but there used to be a band called that.
Are they from Washington?
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I don't know what that. I don't know what that is.
I keep trying
to figure
it out. I had to look it up online because I was going to. I've read the word a bunch of times, but it looks like it says Klatskane, but it's not pronounced that way. And I looked it up on YouTube, and there was like, the mayor of this town does a walk around to attract businesses, and she's like, Klatskanai, or like, I can't say it the way she does, but anyway, I had to cut a part out of a song because I just was like, I'm going to fuck up this word, so I can't figure out. And I asked everyone I knew in Seattle at the time, because I lived in Seattle when I was writing it. Nobody knew. So
nobody knew.
Yeah. I was hoping, with your peninsula, you might have some info on that. But all
not
right.
at all.
Okay.
Not at all.
Right.
I've got nothing. I've
all
got
right.
nothing. I'm sorry. I can't help you with that.
Thank you for trying.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what's important.
Exactly. Yeah. So, so what brought you to Seattle in the first place? What was it? Was it the music itself or what?
Just grunge.
Just
I love
grunge.
That Seattle sound. kind of grunge, I suppose, because Sub Pop had their 20th anniversary like outdoor concert thing or whatever.
Yeah, down in Georgetown, yeah.
And Comets on Fire played, And Ben and I came up from, we were living in San Francisco at the time, mm-hmm. and we had just a great weekend. A lot of our friends live up here. San Francisco was just like getting so expensive. Our friend, we lived in the Mission, and like our friend couldn't move his car for a few days because he had some bone and brain and blood matter on the wheel well because someone had been shot in front of it, and it was evidence. And that same week that that happened, our rent got raised, like doubled almost. And then we spent a really sunny summertime weekend at this like outdoor festival with our friends, and we're like, let's move to Seattle. And so
let's get away from where the people are getting shot in front of our friends' cars.
Yeah, and the sunny, balmy, warm Seattle that, you know, you're so known for. We moved,
sure.
And oh my god, it was on record as like one of the, that winter was like the worst Seattle winter in like something like 20 years. It snowed
a
ton.
Yeah.
We spun out on the highway going to Portland. It was like 6 inches of snow, but there's not really an infrastructure for that. So there was just snow all over the highway. It was crazy.
Was that the year that the bus like slammed through the embankment and like almost fell onto the highway?
Oh my god.
Yeah,
I don't
it was
know.
Up on like Capitol Hill. You know what Capitol Hill is in Seattle, right? And this bus lost control going down a hill. And then at the bottom of this hill, for people that don't live in Seattle, is I-5, the interstate highway. And it's below this hill, and this bus just like crashed through this like barricade, or like the whatever you call it, the railing, you know, on the sidewalk, and was hanging over the highway.
Oh my god!
Because there was so much ice on the road. Yeah, yeah. Seattle's not built for snow and ice.
Oh.
Doesn't work out well in this city.
And I was confused because I didn't really know that was a thing. Because on the East Coast, 3 inches, 6 inches, that is.
Yeah, it's nothing, right?
That's wintertime.
Yeah, yeah.
You get some snow on the ground. It doesn't change how much you, you know, you, the roads get cleared. You have snow tires. You drive around. It's not. So I was even dumber than normal people in snow. Like, I was just like, 6 inches, we're fine to drive, you know, 11
right,
hours. Like,
right. And that's where you get into trouble, right?
Yeah, it
that's
turns
when
out.
You get stuck.
Yeah, I was like, why is this all still on the road? What's happening? I don't like it here.
Right. So what was that? So the reason to move to Seattle was a Sub Pop music festival.
No, I mean it wasn't like let's move there so we could see Sub Pop festivals whenever they happen. But it was like we spent a really fun weekend with our friends here watching music and having a good time, and it kind of just was like, dude, there's so many good bros and just be an adventure. Like everywhere we'd lived or had the choice of living, either Ben had lived or I had lived before, and this was like, we're just gonna both go to somewhere we've never been before and like just have an adventure. So we did.
Yeah, yeah. And it didn't work out.
It did work out in that it was an adventure.
Yeah.
We did have a new time, but it wasn't Seattle's fault. I got the day that we were driving into where we were gonna live later, I found a crazy like I had like a lump and a weird missing patch of hair. In fact, if you've ever seen, did you ever see Jeff Goldblum's The Fly?
Yes.
Okay. In Jeff Goldblum's The Fly, he is.
Hold that mic just a little bit closer.
Oh, a little closer.
There
sorry.
You go.
He's looking in the mirror and, you know, he's transforming into the fly, obviously.
Right,
and
right.
Gina Davis is like, you're going to be fine. You're going to be fine. And he goes, I'm missing patches of hair. I've got a lump in my throat the size of a fist. How do you think I'm going to be fine? And I was like, oh my god, I'm the fly. And so, so I had this weird like thing, but I kind of discovered the patchy hair thing the day we arrived. So it was sort of like, oh my god, some medical disaster is happening. And that's like the day we started living in Seattle.
Yeah.
So it was like a lot of weird like going to doctors and... So it wasn't Seattle's fault that maybe we didn't have a super fun time here. I was just like, oh, no, I'm the fly. So it went, you know, went a little weird.
So did you figure out what it was?
We
did. What was happening?
It turned out I was fine. I was actually really lucky I lived in Seattle. A otolaryngologist named Dr. Mo fixed me. He removed a tumor from my parotid gland. It was benign. My hair grew back. It was dope.
Whoa.
I know, right? What?
Yeah, so did it, like, I mean, was it in your neck?
It was in wherever spit starts. It's like your spit place.
Your saliva gland.
It is, yeah. The old parotid. Okay. Who knew? Who even knew about it? But, yeah. Magic Markers played a Primavera Festival that year in Barcelona, 1 month to the day after my surgery. And the members of Magic Markers colored in the alopecia spots with eyeliner pencils so that I wouldn't feel weird.
Did it hide it?
Yeah. It was so sweet. I did a blowout over it.
right on. So let's go back a little bit. How long have you been playing music? You just mentioned that you were in that band Magic Markers, which was fantastic.
Thank you. We're still a band. It's just
you still are together.
That Pete and John, who play in Magic Markers, are both really awesome dads, and Pete runs a really amazing business with his wife, Julie Nolan, and they make... Oh, look, I'm wearing one of their pieces right now. They make really beautiful jewelry.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
Yeah, so that's still going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We played in Seattle. We played the Crocodile this summer. Summer, yeah.
Oh, my God, I didn't even know that.
It's okay. I would be mad, but it worked out. It was a good show.
Okay, good.
Normally, I would shake my fist in anger.
So when did music start for you? As a little girl?
Yeah, but not successfully.
No.
I think
that's the story for most people.
Perhaps at no point has it ever reached that point. But when I was a little guy, I got these violin lessons, and that was pretty fun.
Mm-hmm.
My father
forced into it?
No. I definitely wanted to play violin. It seemed really fun. But for practicing, it was like I didn't understand why it sounded so bad. It wasn't supposed to sound that way. My grandfather found it really comical because he was a big Jack Benny fan. So I would like play it for laughs, and it was sort of fun. And then later, we moved to a place that didn't have orchestra anymore, so I couldn't play violin. This is sort of boring, but anyway.
No, not at all.
Yeah. My dad and mom both like huge music fans, like love music, talk about music.
Yeah, so there was stuff playing all the time.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're from one of those
families. But they care about music. It's something that matters to them. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Was your family like that?
No, you know, to a certain extent. My dad was super into the Beatles.
The Beatles.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he would always and super into kind of the 60s pop.
Oh,
you know,
pop.
And so
like
that, was always,
like the association
that was always
or something,
kind of playing.
Or?
No, it was always just on the radio.
Yeah,
you know?
Like
he didn't
oldies.
Own a lot of just the oldie station, you know. And he didn't own a lot of music himself. He would always just listen to the radio, or he'd be, you know, tapping his fingers on the counter and stuff. You know, doing the what's that famous drum roll from Wipeout. You know, the Wipeout drum. He was always drumming the Wipeout drum roll, right? Just on everything. And but I always, you know, because we didn't have musical instruments around or anything like that, and I always envied the kids that were like surrounded by musical instruments.
It wasn't quite like that level because I feel like there was an aspect to it that was my father played the drums, but it was like, now is the time to put away childish things, like, because he was an adult. So that was like for when he was a teenager.
Really?
Like, he remarried and sold off, you know. She was like, what are you doing with drums, dude? You're a grown man with a, you know, get it together. Like, and so he was like, okay, I guess I'll sell my drum set now that I'm a grown man.
And was that your mom?
No, he remarried a lady who was like that. No, my mom, they divorced when I was like 3 or 4. But so it wasn't like a thing you did, really.
Yeah.
It's not like it was like, let's all jam as a family. It was just, I love, you know, just people who loved, like, let's listen to, you know, this Ginger Baker drum solo forever. You know, it's like my dad.
Would he nerd out on stuff like that?
Oh,
like,
yeah, big time. Like,
he could listen to, like, a singular track.
Oh, yeah, over and over. Lucky Man by Emerson, Lake, and Palmer was, like, the soundtrack to being 6 for me. It's just like, I hate this song. I hate this song so much. That keyboard, that Keith Emerson.
Right.
I hear that and just like, boom.
So it still just like gets to you? Like you can't stand it?
I can't stand it. I cannot stand it. Yeah. The medieval lyrics. Like, yeah. I hate that song.
I don't know what was going on. There was a period in time, and there still is in certain genres of music, but there was a definite period in time where a lot of people were singing about trolls and dragons.
You know, I was just talking about this like with that. Someone. What was going on in England that everybody was like, and my lady fair came down. Like, what?
Right.
And it's the person was saying, well, there was a lot of, like, folk revival and a lot of the folk stuff that would tie back, you know, like, Matty Groves or whatever, like, would tie back to this kind of, like, lady and landowner fiefdom type vibe or
right,
whatever.
Right.
Like, but, yeah, I would – there's probably a really great reason for that that I would love to know. It probably makes a ton of sense that I don't –
There's got to be an academic paper on it.
No, there definitely somewhere. Is. I'm sure there's probably like a fun to read book about it. I look forward to reading that book. Right. If you know any more about it.
Hopefully it's a choose your own adventure.
Yeah. Maybe right now on this podcast, I think the best way to do a podcast is to just Google facts about stuff you don't know about.
There
so I'm
you
just
go.
Gonna be just using Google right now.
There you go. There
I'm
you
gonna
go
to the library and I'll be right back.
Press pause.
Please.
Go do this.
Please leave it on.
Yeah.
Please leave it silent. I would like just some space.
So you grew up around music or just at least hearing it
all the
time? I grew
up in a place where everyone thought it was really important. My grandmother was just like,
well, that's a great
thing. My grandfather had a nice voice. You know, they all really cared about their dudes who they cared about. It's not like they were making a career out of anything or making a, you know, a concerted effort to play their own music, but they genuinely seemed to find it important. It wasn't like incidental.
Yeah. And so you started by playing the violin.
Mm-hmm.
And how did that all kind of spiral into what you're doing now?
I have no idea.
You have no idea. I know that was an extremely vague question.
Ever since I was six, I thought to myself, I want to shoddily play guitar.
Right.
It's been my dream always. No, I don't know. I don't know how it all came together. It's all a blur.
But when did you start playing guitar then? When did you start focusing on that?
I started playing guitar at the first Magic Markers practice ever. The first time I ever played guitar was with Pete Nolan and Leah Quimby. I never picked up a guitar. I never touched it. He just, Pete was like, he and Leah wanted to jam. They were calling themselves Lap Sabbath, and they would just play together in the basement of my grandparents' house.
Yeah.
And I was like, some time to myself. And I would read upstairs in the apartment, because we all lived together.
Uh-huh.
And it was like a two-flat grandparent-type place. And then Pete Nolan and Leah were like, come play music. And I was like,
sure.
And I came.
Let's go fuck around, right?
Yeah, but that didn't really appeal to me. I didn't like music that sounded that way, so I didn't want to. It just wasn't my thing. I was like, you guys do that. I'm not a musician. And they were like, really, like, come on. So I did it. And we were sort of like, actually, this is pretty fun. And so then we kept doing it. It was just like a fun thing. But Pete Nolan's a really, like, you cannot. That guy's work ethic, he just, like, is always doing something.
Sure.
Doing a lot of things.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
He was like, well, let's, like, make some tapes. Let's, like, play some shows. Let's, like, do stuff. And we're like, this is insane. Leah and I were like, we don't even play these instruments. It would be a joke to play a live show. Why would anyone watch us play music? What is there to see? Anyone. I could hand this guitar to anyone and they could do what I'm doing. And he was like, we're a band. I was like, okay. So then we just.
What year was this?
Like 2001 or two.
Yeah?
Yeah. And then we just started playing, and it was so fun.
Yeah, that's amazing, though. I mean, that's a very cool way to start a project.
Well, it's really weird, I think, because most people who play guitar, the first note they strike isn't in their band with their best friends. You know, they play.
Sure.
You play.
Yeah.
You learn to play. You learn chords.
Yeah.
You learn alone in your bedroom. You learn scales. So it's, yeah. You don't have, like, the second time you ever played guitar be at the first show your band plays?
Yeah. Wait, was that the case? The first show was the second time you played guitar?
Yes.
How did that go?
great. It was awesome.
Did it go well?
We were like, we are really good. We have a lot happening.
So you must have had some sort of like rudimentary skill on there then.
I don't know why you're making that assumption.
No, I mean, well, you started out playing. You started out playing violin. You know how scales work, right?
I was kind like of. Six. I took 1 year of violin lessons.
Oh, okay. This was not. You were not playing violin all the way up until this point.
No, that was just the only other instrument experience I've ever had.
Oh my god.
I know, right?
And so it opened something, obviously. I mean, you had so much fun doing it, right? It must have had some sort of impact, picking up a guitar and playing in a
really
band.
I really didn't like the instrument of guitar. Maybe being raised by like a 60s, 70s rock lover, I hated guitar solos. I hated dirty blues riffs,
Right, right.
Like, all of that would just be like, ugh. Gross. It just grossed me out. Made me feel gross. It wasn't until I started, I went to a women's college and going to...
Where's that? What?
It's called Smith College. Okay. It's in Northampton, Massachusetts. And it was really crazy because, like, you can enter... It was just the world was so kind of hermetic a bit in this certain kind of... And just, like, sort of a tunnel vision style of... what was acceptable, what wasn't, or whatever. And, like, I had a radio show, and I was just, like, I started getting really into heavy guitar and guitar solos. I think maybe it was the environment I was in. Like, it just was the opposite of what people wanted to hear or play or listen to. So, I don't know. It was just in my brain that then I got really into that. But, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's cool. Let's do this. Let's because I'm about to run out of batteries here.
Oh, okay.
Let's go with our second musical break. We're featuring music off of your solo album, The Immortalist. This one is called Stopped Clocks.
It's called The Immortalist.
The Immortalist. Oh, The Immortalist.
It's a book by André Gide.
Well, I screwed that. Screwed that one up.
No.
Didn't I?
I just wanted to tell you just in case. I mean, it's a lot... I think the next one should be called The Immortalist because it's kind of a cool title.
I think you, yes, I think you should. All right, this song is called Stop Clocks, and we'll be right back with more The Air Raid Podcast for your ears. When we return with special guests this week, Elisa Ambrosio.
Ooh.
Did I say that right?
Yeah, you did.
Okay, at least I said that. I mean, it's a big problem for me, anyway, because I, you know, get asked to do things as well, and when I go on something and I'm telling a story about my life or something like that, either I'll remember something, you know, and it'll just be like this new little snippet of information that I put out there, and people are like, you know, I'll get emails sometimes like, wait, you told that story, is this a lie? did you lie about this?
You know,
I was like, no. Well, I just, I thought about, I thought about it a little bit more, and this was actually different. You know, memory is a weird thing.
Memories are really weird, and it's, yeah. Especially if you've ever written down something, or if you've written something down and like, it just sets it in a new kind of context where
sure.
It's harder to know what's real and what was just your story, kind of. I had a friend who would tell just insane stories, you know, where it would be like, all right, come on, okay,
yeah.
That's a good, yeah. All right, you don't have to lie, we're friends. Like, it was just like, you're obviously lying, you're self, you know, mythologizing right now.
Right, you're building it up.
Yeah.
You're building it up.
And then it was one of those things where like, yeah, sure, you have a girlfriend or, you know, one of those things. And then you meet their girlfriend. It's like, she's a model who also has a PhD in philosophy. And she's really in love with him, but he broke up with her because he's busy. Like, stuff where you'd be like, oh, that's not true. Like, I met everyone in Slayer, and they said I was the best guitar player they'd ever met. And I'd be like, no, that didn't. And then I'd be, you'd be like.
And then you run into Slayer, and they're
and
like, hey,
Slayer's
do you know?
Like, do you know that dude? He's amazing, right? And I'd be like, what? Yes. So, there is that weird quality to memory. And
sure, yeah.
There is that, like, desire when you're telling a story about your own experience. It's just, you can't help but sort of tell it inaccurately because it's always subjective. It's always first person experience, whatever.
Right.
My dad is the worst about this. He just makes stuff up off the top of his head and then makes up weird, new, more entertaining lies.
Yeah.
And you're like, you're lying. I was there. And he's like, nah, I'm not. It was a crazy. Remember that? It started raining out of nowhere. And you're like, it never rained. And so, yeah. But he is a really good storyteller. He's super funny. I try not to do that too much, but yeah. Ben Chesney, that guy remembers stories like elephant memory.
Like a steel trap.
It's too much. It's like a steel trap. Come on. Let's
reel it back a little
allow
bit.
Allow me,
dude.
My hyperbole. But yeah, so sorry if I'm repeating anything boring.
No, not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. That's what this show is all about, is just finding out about new musicians
repeating
and how they got.
Crap.
How did they get to the place that they're at? Which is what I find super interesting. But this is, I mean, what we're talking about right now is super, super, God, the word is escaping me right now.
Fascinating, stimulating, intellectually challenging, but at the same time welcoming. So thank you. That's so kind of you to say that, Seth, and I just really appreciate it. Thank you.
No, it's super with the times because this whole thing with Brian Williams is going on right now. You know Brian
That's
Williams
right.
from the nightly
news. This is very
topical.
News. We're having
yeah,
a very
topical. That's what I was, yes. That's what I was looking for. With him, like, you know, exaggerating the tales of where he was, you know, when he was, embedded.
When
in
that
these,
all came out, I was like,
thing.
Oh, my God, thank God. No one in my family
is
ever
in the
had
news.
A position of great
thank
power
God
and influence.
My dad's not a journalist.
Honestly, he would just be, he'd be like, there I was riding a bull through space. And you'd be like, you never did. Yeah.
You weren't in space when you rode that bull, Dad. Yeah, totally. I get it. My dad's the same way. You know, he's just like...
Are you Italian?
No, probably.
Or people.
A little bit. I'm a mutt. I really am. It's a little bit of everything. But my dad is also a very good storyteller, and he can talk to anybody, right? Just, which is, I think, a trait that I inherited from him.
Look at this. You got a microphone.
There you go.
You got a little
right.
box.
That's right. A little box. Yeah.
It's over there.
but yeah, he can, you know, all of his stories, they build on themselves over the years. Like he'll tell the same stories over and over again, but they'll be different each time.
Yes.
And everybody knows it, right? But nobody faults him for it.
Yeah.
You know,
no,
which is great because he's a nice guy.
Yeah.
So, we don't want to, you know, make him feel bad.
Same deal with Paul Ambrosio. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Same deal.
So I was reading your, so... Drag City sent me over this, I don't know what you even call it, like a cut sheet or a one sheet.
Yeah.
About you.
Look
and about
that.
The new
I've
and about
seen that.
And see, it says the Immoralist right here, and I even got it wrong. The Immoralist. That's the next album.
Yeah, that's the metal album.
The Immoralist 2. The Immoralist.
this time it's personal.
But it says in here, and I was wondering about this, like.
All right, lay it on me.
When they're explaining you. And explaining your personality.
Yeah.
In one line here, it says, awkward weirdo.
All right, I gotta say something because
did you write this?
I did. Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't write every little bit of it.
Yeah.
But I did write that sentence because you know, I think that's an important thing to remember. Very socially uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And I am kind of creepy. Thought where
I would
should
not
that go?
I would not.
Probably the one sheet.
I would not say creepy.
I really appreciate that. I mean,
but right when
I
walked,
it's not weird
into
what I'm
place.
Doing to your knee right now.
No, it feels great. But
sorry, I keep throwing clay at you. It's just who I am.
But I will say, when we walked in, we had never met before. You shook my hand, and you took me over to this spot in the bar and showed me this this amazing display of fake birds and
animals. You can't go wrong with taxidermied squirrels drinking beer.
Right, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. So I thought that was, I was like, oh, okay. Awkward weirdo kind of fits here, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, kind of. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like I'm a kind of a, like, you know. I feel like sometimes, let's say the ladies of the world, they get kind of like, they get maybe. So what I'm going to explain now is how my self-effacing humility,
yeah,
in my one sheet is actually serving me in many different ways.
Yeah.
So
that gives you topics to talk about on.
Well, no, I was
on maybe
say
a podcast.
Maybe not. But the ladies out there, a lot of times, and dudes. I mean, anybody who's making a thing, maybe in the world that other people are, you're like, hey, check out my thing. I'm making a thing. Ladies sometimes get maybe put into this thing like, oh, that's a pretty lady. That's a mysterious pretty lady. She's pretty. Or they get like, that's a scary lady. She's a tough, scary lady. She's mean. Yeah. Or like, that's an ethereal. It's like angelic, magical, like folk princesses. Or they're like scary, tough, mean, noise, punching stuff ladies. Or they're just, it's like a sort of weird virgin whore dichotomy that is spread out over like 15 different little
sure.
things you can plug in, you
right,
know, and
right.
like if you know you've got your different characters throughout musical history, you could be like, well, Patti Smith is like, she's tough and scary and has brown hair and is not a poet, but Blondie, she's totally different. She's like fancy and she has like designer clothes and makeup on, so she's like, she's a different kind. They came from the same scene, the same world, the same like dirty holes in New York. They played at the same CBGB's shows. You know, it's like they were just women writing songs that like, but you get kind of like a perception is created around. It's not just women. I know that. I'm not saying it is, but.
No, but there's definitely a stigma put on female musicians.
Well, there's you know,
like you get way more categorized than males do.
Because there's fewer, and because, you know, there's, you know, a different, whatever. I don't want to, I'm not all gendering out over here left and right, but I just wanted to say that the reason why I put that was like, you know what, it can be there's the weird trope now of the manic pixie dream girl that people talk about in movies.
Sure,
like,
sure.
Whatever. There's that, and that's like an adorable, quirky weirdness, or whatever. Like, what if you were just like a gross weirdo, but like you also have a vagina, so you're technically a woman, and you're kind of a gross weirdo. So let's say I'm kind of a gross weirdo.
So a normal human.
Like a normal human. Yes. So that was kind of. It wasn't just like, I'm awkward. Help! I'm scared.
Sure,
I mean,
sure.
It was just being like. Let's call a spade a spade. Let's call let's say
let's
exactly
just put
what
it
this
out
is.
There, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
Let's call it what it is.
I really do like that.
Well, thank you. But yeah, certainly getting by in the day-to-day world, I wouldn't say I am up there with the artists who are difficult to interact with. I have met those dudes. I have met really intense dudes, but in a weird way, that just makes you think like, wow, that person's a genius. They can't even talk to me.
Right.
They can't make eye contact. They are brainiacs.
When you said that, though, I just got like, we've been doing this show for a really long time, and And, you know, we've had our fair share of having to deal with awkward personalities.
Sure.
Some that won't make eye contact or that talk very quietly. You know, you can't even hear them or something like that. Or people that are just assholes. And those are the ones you remember. The ones that are assholes. Right? Like,
it's shocking sometimes to meet somebody who's like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure you have to deal with it all the time, right? I would imagine.
Not really.
No?
Because I think once you reach a certain point, like... Honestly, if I'm to go by the people I know in art and music and writing that have reached a certain level of, like, they've accomplished something really amazing, something I admire, mm-hmm. the people who I really admire, whose work I really admire, the ones I've gotten to meet out of that cadre of duders, the people who communicate on a wide level, are often the most sort of...
down to earth?
Kind, sort of, just like people who are just very conscious of the world around them and being, I don't know, I just, there's probably tons of cases of sociopathic, creepy narcissists that are just like clawing their way through life, winning money
sure.
and prizes and naked ladies, but the ones I've met are genuinely decent people who are amazingly generous and always just constantly learning, always learning and always wanting to share what they're learning. And yeah, but I mean, maybe it's because I myself am a B-level talent. They're not threatened by me, so they embrace me.
Don't say that. Don't say that.
No, but see, that's indicative of my own lack of decency, because a really good person would have never had that thought. For real.
You think so?
Only,
you think that's it?
Only kind of a dick would have that thought.
I don't think so.
Just came to me now, and I spoke it as I thought it, and then I thought, that's just indicative of your shitty, shitty soul.
No, man. Mm-hmm. No, man. That's just being...
I've literally never thought that thought before.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. New story.
I'm a monster among men.
My God. So, I mean, is there... Does that transfer to your stage performance at all? Like, are you naturally a bit of a self-loathing person?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, totally. Way less recently. The more work I do, the less... I only hate myself when I'm lazy or cowardly.
Yep.
That's when it all just turns inward and I'm like, really, yeah. If I work and I'm taking risks in the world and I'm... working and I'm disciplined, I don't have that same inhibiting, like, eating feeling where
yeah.
it's like, but it's really hard because if you have that breaking out of it, you know exactly what needs to happen, but you are paralyzed by your own, it's like its own little Ouroboros of being a bummer.
Right.
Into
right.
hating how you're being a bummer. And,
yeah, it's the snake eating its own tail. Yes. I experience the same thing, and I find that it, or do you find that, like, it's just a matter of keeping yourself busy to keep you out of that cycle? Like, is
not
it just a busyness thing?
It can't just be, it's not
or
like...
Or feeling like you're accomplishing something.
I'm late for my job at the Dairy Queen. I better get there because the cones haven't been ordered. And
by the way,
I
love these
I
voices
to.
That you do.
I don't even do it consciously. I think it's, I don't know. I'm actually going to apologize for it.
I was being very sincere when I said
with
that.
With my mouth part, when it's not connecting to my brain part,
yeah.
I don't realize that I don't sound exactly like what I'm trying to sound like. Like, if I do an impression of a dude from New York City who's, like, tough and scary, I think I'm just, like, sounding just like that. But I'm not. And I know that now, but hearing your own voice back ever is the worst.
That's the
you
most
have to
trippy
get over.
Thing ever.
Yeah, it's, like,
yeah.
trippy.
Yeah.
And it's also, like, you do almost have to... create a separation between you and how you actually are or sound to get any stuff done in that way, but yeah, I feel like okay, I feel like I'm getting off track here and I'm not gonna have anything like whatever.
We were talking about self-esteem. self-esteem on stage and how kind of like...
Oh, you were asking me how it translated to that kind of stuff.
Sure,
and then we were talking about busyness and like, does busyness keep
Yeah,
you
we kind of get...
Whatever.
That was my fault. That was my
no,
fault.
No, no, no.
Don't you feel bad about that.
Well, the busyness thing, yeah, like I actually, my first job out of high school was Dairy Queen, so that's why I thought of Dairy Queen. Like, if I was going to, like, order cones or clean out the soft serve machine or replace the bag or whatever, like, I would be, like, you know.
By the way, those things are the worst. Cleaning
Have
out
you
the
cleaned
sock.
One of those?
Oh my God! Yeah.
Yeah, it's
they are awful.
Gross.
I mean,
You're
it,
so
yeah,
sticky.
It's disgusting. And if you don't get like one glob of shit out of the tube, you know, it's going to turn the whole thing freaking like green or something like that the next day. You know,
and it's just
disgusting.
Like stinky, festering old milk smell.
Yeah,
that job was really hard.
No, I had to. I worked at the college that I went to. I worked in the like cafeteria. Area, you know, where everybody would come on weekends and like eat everything, you know, it was all buffet style. Everybody that's been to college knows exactly what I'm talking about, the food hall, whatever it's called. And it was just the grossest food.
Did you have to clean the sneeze guard?
Yeah, I had to do that. Well, that's where I got graduated to after I worked what was called the scrape line, which is the conveyor belt that goes into the back room where you put your tray on it with all the dirty dishes. That was, like, the worst fucking job I've ever had in my life. I've had some really bad jobs.
What? That's really the worst one?
That was the worst job I've ever had. It was terrible.
Dairy Queen was not
Absolutely
the worst
terrible.
Job I've ever had.
No?
No.
No? Worst job. Worst job. Go.
Working at a place called the League, the Art League of Chicago. It was like
doesn't sound bad. That sounds artsy.
I know. I know what you're saying, but it was like a lady wearing like really expensive suits, and another lady deciding what color napkins like the benefit gala would have, and me being like, I guess the lighter blue, and sitting at this desk.
Wait a minute. You're just like picking the color? Is that or you
I
you're
was like a receptionist at this place, and these incredibly wealthy members of this exclusive wealthy person club would come in and ask me questions, and we had an essay contest for scholarships to be won. And I looked at the list of schools, and I was like, wow, there's like 20 schools in this. There's so many needy kids in Chicago.
Right.
Like, give me a break. How come it's just these 20? They're like kind of in good neighborhoods and fancy schools. So my job was like actually to open up the contest a little more. So that's what I was like. I pretty much like tripled it.
Yeah.
The reach of the contest. And the essays were not of the same caliber of your like more academically challenging schools, whatever. Anyway, after that, it was like later loser. Like they were bummed on me after that.
Really?
Yeah, and just everything.
They fire you?
They didn't fire me, but it was just sort of like I actually quit to go on a European tour. So it's not, and you know, it was like a half. You know, I only worked like probably 25 hours a week at that job. It was just like. Everything about it was awful. There was so much money, and all these people.
But they were just giving money to people with
who
money.
Who had money?
Yeah, yeah.
It was so wild to me. It was like a whole other level of experience. It was like not a fun job.
That's terrible.
For me. It was just.
That sounds like that's way worse than mine. Mine was just physical, like physical grossness, right? Having to deal with physical grossness. You're dealing with like emotional grossness. Or ego grossness.
It was just something I had never seen, and I didn't know that I would, like, not be getting everyone stoked when, like, these, like, you know, reams of poorly formatted, spelled, you know, like, it's true. It made there be more work for the judges, but it's like, so you're just saying everyone at that, in that school district cannot write an essay that would win a scholarship, so you're just not even going to try to send it to them. It just... Whatever, my social justice Fire burned bright.
Social justice is hard, man.
Oh boy, I really mucked it up.
There is a system in place.
I did very little
Elisa.
To help the economic disparity.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
I did nothing.
Well, it really makes you realize that there is, like, just what I said. There is a system in place, you know, and it is really fucking hard to break out of it. You know, I mean, it's sad, and it shouldn't exist. But it's there, you know? And it's a goddamn steel wall. Meh.
Speaking of steel walls, you watching Game of Thrones?
I'm going to.
Are you?
Yeah.
Right, then I won't talk about it.
Wait a minute. No, it hasn't started yet, though.
No, but...
The new season.
But have you seen the old season?
Oh, yeah. I'm all caught up, man.
So you're familiar with the wall?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Yeah. Okay.
I'm so familiar, in fact, that I took my daughter, my 3-year-old daughter, to the Experience Music Museum.
I've been there. I went there with Ben and his sister, and we checked it out.
Cool place. Right now, or maybe it's not still there. If it is, you guys should try to make some time to check it out, but... They've got some virtual reality, this new virtual reality called Oculus Rift.
Whoa.
Where you put it on, and it's super high definition, and you scale you take an elevator up, like this is all virtual reality, you get in this like fake elevator, and they close it off, and they put the thing on your head, and they put earphones on, and then it turns on, and all of a sudden you're in the elevator that's going to go up the wall in Game of Thrones. And you're looking out on the courtyard, and you can look all over. There's snow falling and stuff. You can look up and around and everything, and there's wind blowing on your face. And, like, you know, it's insane. Like, you can turn 360 degrees in four dimensions, right? Like, up,
you can
down,
go to Castle
left,
Black.
Right. You're in Castle Black. That's right, Castle Black. And then they take you up to the top of the wall, and you get, there's a series of different ones that is just random, whatever you get. And then you walk out to the edge of the wall and you can look out over everything. And the one that I had, there was a fucking catapult down on the ground and it shot this fireball up at me and I crashed and fell off the wall and almost got sick because I'm super afraid of heights.
It
was so real and I'm super afraid of heights and I could not look down. So I just looked up at the sky as I'm falling, you know, however many feet that's supposed to be. And it's only 60 seconds. You're only in this thing for 60 seconds, and it is phenomenal. So
if I had known, I would have canceled this podcast. I would have been like, sorry, we got stuck at the border. I would have been nothing but Oculus Rift up in my face.
That's right.
Because I didn't
know
that was possible.
That's
right.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's really cool. That whole thing, man, virtual reality, I'm way into it. I'm on board. After seeing that, I'm on board. Come buy it.
Wow, that sounds awesome.
Yeah. So, yeah, Game of Thrones.
Experience Dragons Project.
That would be great. If they could put a dragon in there, if you could ride a dragon around, that'd be amazing. That would be amazing. So let's close out this conversation with talking about, like, where you're at now musically. And if you're in a place that you like.
Yeah, I'm in. I was gonna make such a dad joke. This is my friend's tavern, the Cozy Nut.
Yeah,
here in beautiful Greenwood, Seattle.
Greenwood, Seattle. Yeah,
come on down. Drink specials every day. I am in a. I'm really happy. I missed being able to tour as much as I like to tour. The last Magic Markers record, Turn Into the Fantasy. I love that record. We worked really hard on it, and it just like. You have to be able to play it as, you know, there's just something different that happens if you can play, like, I don't know, 6 months out of the year, play live shows.
Sure.
And so I was sort of sad I didn't, you know, we didn't get to tour as hard as I wanted to on that record. Understandably, I mean, for the amount of work that the other people in my band do in their real life and the amount of time they give to Magic Markers, it is kind of crazy. Most people in their situations would have been like, you know what? I work literally 80 hours a week on things, and I can't be in a band anymore. But they would, you know, I mean, we probably toured like 2 or 3 months out of the year, and that's kind of a ton for two dads, like, that are really, really either, like, John is a stay-at-home dad, and Pete is, owns a business with his wife and is taking care of his daughter, so they gave a ton to that record and to touring on it. But for me, I need I've built my life around what matters for me personally the most, and so this has been really great because it's just me, so I'm
And this is your first solo record.
It's my first solo record, and I think, you know, maybe if I hadn't had the experience of, you know, if those guys could just were able to play as much as I wanted to do that, it would certainly make their children's lives impoverished and very at risk. They'd all be, they would all have cholera.
Yeah.
Were they to commit to medical
cholera murders? And divorced.
Cholera, rickets, divorces. So I'm glad that they can't, but I'm also glad that the way my life is structured, that I have the amazing liberty to do this. And I know that your health and your, like, economic circumstance and just sheer luck of, like, somebody caring enough to want you to play a show, all of that is just, like, a super blessed thing for me. So that's pretty cool. Yeah, I'm super happy right now. It feels, it's so fun. It's just traveling and playing music and writing new stuff and feeling like you're communicating with total strangers is wild. It's really nice.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
So I'm, like, doing pretty all right. It's, like, pretty cool.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with me. It's been a pleasure.
I appreciate you doing this and coming out to the Cozy Nut. It's
That's
so
right.
cool.
Yeah. It's only
really nice
a couple miles away from where I live, so it was super easy.
That is great.
Yeah.
I don't know if you have a closing thing that you said you like to say.
What?
You have that little phrase you always say at the end of every podcast, right?
A little bit, yeah. It kind of changes all the time.
It changes every time.
And actually with this one, since we're doing it in a bar, I'm going to record it in the studio. So
we won't say it in chorus right
now.
No,
we can't.
That's too bad.
It's not going to work out this time. I'm sorry. Maybe when you come back through Seattle. I did just want to say that I really, really enjoy The Immoralist.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, and I got it right. And I think you did a great job for a first solo record. This is fantastic.
Thank you. That's
and,
so nice.
Wish all the best for you in the future.
Thank you.
Thanks
I
for taking
wish
the time.
You
the best. Oh, thank you very much.
Like a light slips beneath your door at night. Whose dreams were they? Desperate as the light sold down the river. That is pride, a grace and try to fight the tide.
Well, that was nice, wasn't it? Yeah, man, that was great. That was great. I love her. And you should too, guys. You really should. If you haven't yet, check out Magic Markers, her band that she's been a part of for many years. And also check out this solo album, man. The rest of this album is fantastic. It's lo-fi, it's dreamy, it's punk, and it's just wonderful. It's just all around wonderful. Great, great album. And you can find out more about Alisa by going to dragcity.com/artists/Alisa Ambrosio. Or you can just click the link that we have provided in the show blog. All right. Alisa has some dates. She's on tour right now with 6 Organs of Admittance. And let's see. They are next going to be in San Francisco, California on the 26th. Los Angeles on the 27th, San Diego on the 28th, Minneapolis on the 21st of, in a couple months. So go to the Drag City website. You can find all the tour stops on there. And make sure to check them live, man. Check them live. All right. We're going to go out today with this song called Arkansas from The Immoralists. And I hope you guys enjoyed it. I had a great time talking with her. And we'll be back next week with an all new episode of the Air Raid Podcast. Of course we will. Why wouldn't we, right? Yeah, of course. That was stupid of me to say. Hey, and also, please remember, go make a donation to the You Caring fundraising site for PJ Allers, dear, dear friend of us, of ours here in the backyard. And also, you know, the brother of Nick Allers, who is part one half of the Grapes of Rad podcast. So he could really use your help. The family could use your help. So let's do that, shall we? All right. Go make a donation. Anything is gonna help out. And, you know, one thing that I didn't mention before, why don't you share it? Just share it. You know, if you can't donate any money, just share this on Facebook, share it on your socials, get the word out there. Let's help PJ and his family. All right. Okay, thanks everybody for listening. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Once again, you can find us at air-raid.net on the web. If you'd like, you can click on the Archives tab and check out all 236 episodes for free. You can find us on Facebook at the air-raid.net. Just click in the search bar there and search for us. We're on Twitter at air-raid.net. And let's see, you can send us emails too. Aaron at air-raid.net. There it is, man. There it is. We're all over the place. All right. Okay, this is Arkansas by Elisa Ambrosio. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Have a great week. No dust can choke a man who builds a lake so down the river. He had his pride, a grace in trying.